this is a very, very difficult issue of conscience for many, many people. In my case, I hate abortion. I would encourage someone to not take that option. But ultimately, since it is an issue of conscience, I would respect a woman's right to make a different choice. When you come down to that choice, you have to respect a woman's right to make that choice differently than my conscience.
That's Rudolph Giuliani in a recent presidential debate trying to explain his position on abortion. He says he hates abortion, but he supports abortion. He doesn't want it to happen, but he wants it to continue. It's a little difficult to sort that out, isn't it? Well, this isn't going to be the last time he's going to have to explain his position on abortion, but I've heard it before, haven't you? It was 4 years ago, I think. And it wasn't Rudolph Giuliani, it was John Kerry, a Democrat running for president. Well, some people say Rudolph Giuliani is as likely as anyone else to make it to the nomination for the Republican side of the presidential race in 2008. And he's going to do it as someone who's personally opposed to abortion, but publicly in favor of abortion. Earlier today, I had an opportunity to talk with Colleen Carroll Campbell about this issue and another issue pertaining to Missouri voters. Colleen Carroll Campbell is a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of the book, The New Faithful, Why Young Adults Are Embracing Christian Orthodoxy, and a weekly columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. She's written on these two subjects for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I'll tell you how you can read them in a few minutes. We started our conversation earlier today pointing out that while John Kerry and Rudolph Giuliani are men of two different parties, is there a difference in their positions on abortion?
No, they're really not. And I think Rudy Giuliani is just as far from the church's position as John Kerry.
So what is the role of Archbishop Raymond Burke in all of this, past and present?
Well, there's some background probably needed just to answer that question. For both Kerry, Giuliani, and unfortunately scores of other politicians, they are actively promoting abortion on demand. These are politicians who receive 100% scores from the National Abortion Rights Action League. They oppose basically any restrictions on abortion. Kerry opposed even a ban on partial birth abortion. Giuliani did the same. Giuliani and Kerry have both supported taxpayer-funded abortions. So these are not folks who are minimally pro-choice. They're really out on the extreme edges pushing for abortion on demand. In Catholic teaching, the defense of innocent life is considered a fundamental part of the faith, a teaching that applies not just to Catholics, but is available to anyone through reason. That is, it's part of the natural moral law that people simply can know through reason. And so when a politician directly contradicts that defense of innocent human life, they're doing something very different than, say, contradicting the church on a teaching about a theological matter. They're really contradicting a fundamental moral position that is held by people a lot farther broad reaches than just the Catholic Church. And for that reason, the church takes this kind of thing very seriously.
Has Rudolph Giuliani's stated position now as he's running for president on the Republican ticket? He says, I hate abortion. I wish it wouldn't happen. I would counsel against it. I don't think people should be doing it. Has that always been his vocal position in the past?
No, absolutely not. The Village Voice had a very interesting piece back in June chronicling his abortion position over the years. When he was mayor of New York, this whole personal abhorrence of abortion was completely unknown. He held three times celebrations at City Hall of the Roe versus Wade ruling that helped legalize abortion on demand. He personally donated to Planned Parenthood. He championed taxpayer-funded and partial birth abortions. There were even some quotes in that particular piece from abortion advocates who felt he went a little far in funding abortions of even wealthy women in New York. So, I mean, this is a man whose personal distaste for abortion was basically unknown until he decided to get into the Republican primary. And that other issue of I'm personally opposed but publicly supportive, that's a position he shares with many Catholic politicians, including many on the Democratic side. What's interesting is most of these politicians don't take that tact on any other issue. For instance, Mario Cuomo, who really kind of developed that alibi in the 80s, I'm personally opposed but I can't impose my views on others, took a very different approach when he was addressing capital punishment. Even though his constituents favored capital punishment I think it was about a half a dozen times that he fought to abolish it anyway. And he explicitly said at one point, I ought to get more credit from Catholic bishops for going against the will of the people in order to oppose capital punishment. So clearly the lesson is when you really care about an issue, you don't worry so much whether you're imposing your views. But if you're not so sure, or in fact maybe you secretly don't really think it's a problem, then you kind of fall back on the old, well, gee, I don't want to impose my views on others.
Well, you end your article by saying, picking up on what you just said, that this I'm personally opposed, but I publicly support abortion really only leads to two conclusions. You just named them quickly. Go back over them again a little more slowly.
Well, the two conclusions that you can take from that are either that these Catholic politicians do agree with their church and consider abortion to be intrinsically evil. That means always and everywhere wrong. But they simply lack the political courage to act on their convictions. The other alternative is they don't actually agree with the church. They don't think abortion is always wrong, but they lack the integrity to honestly say, you know what, I disagree here, and I'm going to accept the consequences that follow, even if those consequences include not receiving communion or being out of favor with Catholic leaders.
Sad to say, Archbishop Raymond Burke, although he is acting fully in accord with the stated and long-held teachings of the Roman Catholic Church in saying that pro-choice Roman Catholic politicians should not present themselves for communion, he is in some ways not a lone voice, but nearly a lone voice, even among his own fellow bishops and Roman Catholics. Talk about that.
He's certainly in the minority among Catholic bishops. There's a growing number, fortunately, that have started to more publicly proclaim this position, but you're right, it's a minority. They've had backing from our current Pope, Benedict XVI. Before he became Pope, he was running the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, which basically makes the calls on these issues. He said during the last communion controversy in a letter to a prominent American cardinal that not all issues have the same moral weight as abortion and euthanasia, and Catholics simply aren't free to push those things and disagree with the church publicly and then still consider themselves in good standing. So Burke has the theology and the moral teaching on his side. Unfortunately, I think many bishops have simply been cowed into silence. They figure this is just another divisive thing. They don't want to take responsibility for doing this. However, there's another meeting coming up with Catholic bishops, and it'll be interesting to see if they take a stronger approach in light of this very powerful argument that Burke has put forward from canon law, that is, church law.
Colleen Carroll Campbell is our guest, fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of the book The New Faithful, and a weekly columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. One other question on the Giuliani-Burke kind of angle here. If Giuliani actually gets the nod during the primary season and becomes the Republican candidate for president in 2008, what do you think is going to happen?
I think the values voters, those who are socially and religiously conservative, at least on these issues, will probably stay home. I think it's really going to be a bad idea for the Republican Party to nominate someone whose position is indistinguishable on one of the most potent political issues of our day from the Democratic nominee. And frankly, Rudy Giuliani doesn't have a lot to commend him to some of these voters, especially Catholic voters who tend to often have long ties to the Democratic Party, and the only reason they're voting Republican is because of the life issues. If you lose them on those issues, then why would they vote Republican? Most of them aren't terribly concerned necessarily about tax cuts, for instance. So if you lose them on the one issue that had persuaded them to come over on to your side, these Reagan Democrats, I think we'll just revert back to the Democratic Party, and I think it'd be a bad decision for Republican leaders.
The second subject that we wanted to discuss with you, you have written about recently, Carnahan fumbles again in Missouri and the cloning battle. One of the duties of the Secretary of State in Missouri is to write ballot summaries. Sounds like a pretty dry and neutral activity. Why is it important in the case of Robin Carnahan?
Well, the reason the ballot summary is important is that when a group proposes an amendment to the Constitution or some sort of a ballot initiative, it's generally fairly lengthy, and it doesn't go on the ballot. So for the average Joe who's going into the voting booth on election day, the only thing he learns about this initiative at the ballot box is what he reads in the summary. So to summarize the initiatives that are proposed, the summary is very important because it's all the voters will see on election day.
All right. Then tell us the story. Secretary of State Carnahan, just about a year ago, if I remember correctly, wrote a ballot summary for Amendment 2. What happened there and what's happening now?
In the Amendment 2 ballot summary, she basically adopted the language of the amendment sponsors literally verbatim. I've seen the emails. I've seen what they submitted to her and what she wound up adopting. It's almost indistinguishable. So basically, she took her talking points for this ballot summary straight from the people who wrote the amendment. That wouldn't necessarily be a problem, except for the fact that the amendment defined cloning in a way virtually unheard of anywhere else. No one had ever seen this definition of cloning used before. They said, well, cloning isn't actually the creation of a cloned human embryo. Cloning is when you implant it in a uterus and allow it to be born. Well, that's not the definition of cloning as any scientists and most of the popular press understand it, but she let it pass. She wrote a summary that summarized an amendment that would make research cloning a constitutional right without ever using the words embryo, embryonic, or cloning, except to say it banned cloning. It was a very deceptive summary, and she got it straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak, the authors of Amendment 2. This time around, a new group, Cures Without Cloning, is trying to pass an amendment that would close that cloning loophole and ban both cloning for research, which kills human embryos, and cloning for reproduction, which would create cloned babies in addition to cloned embryos, that is, allow the embryos to grow into babies. Both types of cloning have generally been found to be abhorrent to voters when they understand what's going on. This amendment would ban both types, and she wrote a ballot summary where you would have no idea that that's what the amendment does. She actually wrote one that said this new amendment would repeal the old cloning ban and criminalize cures. Very loaded and misleading language.
What can be done on the part of Missouri voters and concerned citizens when the Secretary of State, it looks like to me, obviously has an axe to grind here and is using the power of writing ballot summaries to mislead voters? What kind of recourse is there?
Well, unfortunately, Carnahan has pulled this many, many times. She's already in a legal fight with another group over another summary she wrote for the 08 ballot. She's also getting flack for another misleading summary she wrote for the 06 ballot. She's been taken to court a number of times. So she's clearly partisan on these issues and believes she has the latitude to write slanted summaries if it serves her party's interest and her personal political interest. I think what voters can do is, A, keep this in mind when she's running again for Secretary of State in 2 years, rather next year. I think whoever her opponent is would be well served to remind voters about this. Unfortunately, she has no declared opponent at this time. B, write letters to the editor in the newspaper. Let her know and let others know what you think of her playing politics with Missouri voters. And see, I think making your voice heard to the Secretary of State's office. If she gets enough flack, she might figure out that voters are onto this and we don't like her abusing her powers as Secretary of State to push a partisan cause.
Why the attempt, not only on part of Carnahan as Secretary of State, but on the part of those who wrote Amendment 2 and those who would oppose the closing the loopholes on Amendment 2? Why the attempt to conceal the plain and simple meaning of these words and the true nature of what they want?
Polls consistently show that when you ask voters, do you support human cloning, the answer is an emphatic no. Whether you say, do you support creating cloned embryos and then killing them for research, or do you support creating cloned embryos and allowing them to be born and grow up as living clones, the answer to both questions in most polls is no. However, pollsters have also found that if you don't use the term cloning and you make no reference to embryos and you don't clearly explain what's involved in the process and you call it, for instance, by its scientific name, which is somatic cell nuclear transfer, people say, well, okay, that doesn't sound too bad, because they're not hearing about any of the controversy. The authors of Amendment 2 know this. They've got a long track record in scientific journals of trying to push this Orwellian language and their novel new definitions of cloning. Most of the scientific journals rejected them, actually, all of them. But Missouri's Secretary of State was not as swift or maybe not as discerning. So really what it is if you ask people plainly, do you want any kind of cloning, the answer is no. So you can't ask them plainly if you really want to make sure that they say yes to what you want. It's simply a power play, and they're using words to deceive people.
Colleen, when are you going to run for office?
Oh, I think I make too many enemies with my columns to ever do that.
I'm certain of that. But it's the honesty and your approach is refreshing. Colleen Carroll Campbell is a regular guest on the program, a weekly columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can read her columns at Colleen-Campbell.com, Colleen-Campbell.com. She's author of the book, The New Faithful, Why Young Adults Are Embracing Christian Orthodoxy, and she's a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Colleen, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd.
So how do you react to the two issues we discussed there with Colleen Carroll Campbell? First of all, Archbishop Raymond Burke taking a pretty hard line on Roman Catholic politicians who deny the church's teaching on the life issue, even though they say, I hate abortion, I don't want to see abortions happen, yet they refuse to vote against abortion, they refuse to do anything about it. It used to be kind of mostly a Democratic thing, but with Rudolph Giuliani rising to the top in the presidential race, it could very well be the Republican nominee for president in 2008 who's in that position. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. How do you react to the Missouri Secretary of State Carnahan's attempt to sway voters by how she words ballot summaries, ballot initiative summaries for the voters? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address, it's Thursday, October the 18th. It's audio open lines, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, if you listen to this interview with Colleen, you can begin to understand why Issues Etc. is talk radio for the thinking Christian. Well, there's a university right here in St. Louis for thinking Christians just like you. It's Concordia University St. Louis Center. Classes meet just one night a week for your convenience. You can find out more about Concordia University St. Louis Center by calling 314-984-8840, 314-984-8840, or look for information about Concordia University St. Louis Center under the What's New section of our website, issuesetc.org. It's professional education with a personal touch. Concordia University St. Louis Center. It's audio open lines, Issues Etc. We're asking the question about your reaction to Colleen Carroll Campbell's latest columns, especially on that Giuliani issue for Republicans. You know, another thing that has been catching the attention of the media lately is indecision. When it comes to who you're going to vote for, it's Giuliani's just the tip of the iceberg. I was reading in First Things just this afternoon, someone, I think it was one of the editors of First Things, bemoaning the fact that, in his words, the poorest crop of candidates on the Republican side that he's ever seen in his long political career. He doesn't want to vote for any of them. James Dobson was in the news lately saying he's not really interested in voting for any of the front runners on the Republican side. It's a dilemma facing evangelical voters. It's a dilemma facing conservative voters for 2008 when you don't really want to vote for any of the people who look like they might emerge as the candidate. It's very difficult to make up your mind when all of your choices are choices that you don't really want to make. Are you going to choose between the lesser of two evils? Or are you going to stick it out or stand it out or sit it out? What are you going to do in 2008? PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly has a story on what it calls evangelical indecision going into the presidential elections for 2008. Let's listen, and I want your reaction to it. It's audio open lines, Issues Etc. 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850. Or our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. This story comes from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly.
On paper, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee seems like a perfect presidential candidate for conservative religious voters. He's a pastor-turned-politician with longer executive government experience than any other Republican in the race. He's solidly against abortion and gay marriage. and he speaks openly about his faith.
If it's real faith, it's a part of our lives. We should be comfortable talking about it, just like I'd be comfortable talking about my allegiance to the Arkansas Razorback football team. That's not difficult for me. Why should religion be so difficult for me to talk about?
We are the body, while his arms reach in.
But the majority of evangelicals haven't embraced Huckabee's presidential campaign, or anyone else's for that matter. When it comes to picking a candidate in the 2008 elections, many are still seeking divine guidance.
I pray, Father, that you would make it clear who your choice is tonight, so that we, your people, called by your name, can unify behind your choice.
Most evangelicals tend to be more Republican than Democratic, but they're not behind any particular candidate. A few people are supporting each of the major Republican candidates, and an awful lot of evangelicals are simply undecided.
John Green of the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life says evangelical support was crucial to GOP victories in 2004.
They made it possible for the Republicans to carry all of the states in the South and to win key swing states like Ohio and Missouri in what was otherwise a very, very close election. To have any diminution of that strong voting base in the Republican Party would be problematic for a Republican presidential campaign. And if it was diminished by a large amount, it might spell defeat.
Many religious conservatives are reluctant to support Republican frontrunner Rudy Giuliani because of his stance in favor of abortion rights and gay rights. Although some evangelical leaders have endorsed former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, others in the community are finding it difficult to support him because of his Mormon faith. Former Tennessee Senator Fred Thompson has some evangelical support, but he disappointed many with his recent admission that he does not regularly attend church, even though he said he is, quote, right with God. None of those three attended a values voter debate last month, sponsored by several conservative pro-family groups.
I predict that because they snubbed us, they will not win, because we will not follow their lead.
After the debate, organizers took a straw poll of those in the audience. Mike Huckabee was the runaway winner.
If the Republicans nominate someone who's an establishment Republican and who's a wholly owned subsidiary of Wall Street or the K Street lobbyist, we're going to lose the election. We better elect somebody who understands what it's like to live on Main Street in real-world America.
We're listening to a story from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly on evangelical indecision. Now, it's hard to blame evangelical voters for being undecided. First of all, it's a long time until it's time to vote, finally, for a candidate. And second, this is the first time we've had a frontrunner who's pro-choice, or a prospective frontrunner who's pro-choice. And another prospective frontrunner who is pro-life lately, but a Mormon. And then someone like Fred Thompson, who, although he didn't get in late, he got in when most presidential candidates get in. He got in later than everyone else, and people are still trying to sort out where he's coming from. I think I heard that Brownback dropped out this week of the race. Huckabee wins straw polls, but Huckabee is not considered to be electable in 2008. So you can understand the evangelical indecision. Is it part of your indecision? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mark, host of Life Revised. Toxic relationships can be physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually damaging. Please join my co-host, Michelle Bauer, and me and discover how you can reverse the damage and have a new outlook on life. We'll help you define a toxic relationship so you can recognize and deal appropriately with them in your life. Join us on Life Revised, because life is a series of revisions.
Saturday mornings at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Are you tired of the constant battle to protect your child from the media garbage that comes into your home? On the next Focus on the Family broadcast, Dr. James Dobson visits with conservative talk radio host and best-selling author Laura Ingraham about her new book, Power to the People. It's what you need to know to protect your family. On the next Focus on the Family with Dr. James Dobson.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. House Republicans are fighting to protect freedom of speech on the airwaves. They're using a unique method to reintroduce a bill that prevents a return of the Fairness Doctrine without an act of Congress. It requires broadcasters to present both sides of a political debate. Josh Montez reports if their plan is successful, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi can't keep the act from getting a floor vote.
To ensure the Broadcaster Freedom Act gets an up or down vote on the floor, Representative Mike Pence is using a unique strategy, a discharge petition. If 218 members of Congress sign it, the bill goes directly to the floor. Speaker Pelosi is bypassed, and the Fairness Doctrine gets erased.
The Broadcaster Freedom Act would simply ensure that no future president could regulate the airwaves of America without an act of Congress.
Pence is asking his colleagues from both sides of the aisle to sign on.
If you oppose the Fairness Doctrine, sign the petition. If you cherish the dynamic national asset that is American talk radio, sign the petition.
Congressman Greg Walden owns and operates radio stations in his home state of Oregon. He says the Fairness Doctrine is a veiled attempt to silence critics of the powerful elite.
While we know this FCC has no intention of regulating political speech, as evidenced by the letter from Chairman Martin, there's nothing to stop a future FCC from writing a rule to do so.
Amanda Banks of the Wabash Group is pleased the Broadcaster Freedom Act may get another chance.
The sooner the better on this. The Fairness Doctrine is such a huge threat to our freedom of speech in this country, and so we've got to nip this in the bud as quickly as we possibly can.
Recently, over 300 members of the House cast their vote in favor of a bill that bans the Fairness Doctrine for 1 year. For Family News in Focus, I'm Josh Montez.
President Bush reportedly said he would sign the Broadcaster Freedom Act if it comes to his desk. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson with an invitation for you to share some moments with me each noon hour on Moments of Assurance here on AM 850 KFUBO. Each day, my goal is to reassure you of God's gift of faith and of eternal life. Of course, I also talk about the many challenges of life, including severe strife, and how you can cope through the sure hope that God gives you in Jesus Christ. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance each weekday at 12:05.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Jeff Walls is the co-author of our book of the month for October, Lutheran Pastors and Politics, Issues in the Public Square. You can learn more from Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or find the book cover on our homepage, issuesetc.org. Lutheran Pastors and Politics costs $27.99 plus shipping and handling. Lutheran Pastors and Politics, our Issues Etc. book of the month for October.
I don't know whether to call it evangelical indecision or evangelical frustration. It is a certain amount of frustration. I mentioned before the break the article I was reading in First Things magazine, and it sounded like frustration to me, frustration that there aren't enough good choices to make. Isn't that odd? We have a presidential race with more people announced to run than in all of the history of the United States on both sides of the aisle, and people on both sides of the aisle, but especially evangelical voters and conservative voters, feel like they don't have any good choices to make. Or if they make a choice, it's going to be a compromise, a big compromise of some kind. Do you feel the same way? It's Audio Open Lines. We're listening to a PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly story on evangelical indecision with the 2008 presidential candidates. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. So what describes your position on this issue? Are you undecided? Frustrated? Waiting for someone to emerge who could possibly be your candidate? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or Issues ETC at KFUO.org. After some audio open lines, we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. That's going to come up here in about an hour on Issues Etc. We've got four sound bites to play for you from this week's Issues Etc. audio. We play them for you, then you call and you tell us which of the four sound bites you think should be the Issues Etc. soundbite of the week and why. We're coming to you live Thursday, October the 18th, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issues, etc., at kfuo.org. Let's pick up where we left off in this PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly story. It's discussion of Arkansas's Mike Huckabee and some of his hard words for Christian conservatives.
For more than 10 years before he entered Arkansas politics, Huckabee was a Southern Baptist minister. He says being a pastor was a great training ground for being president.
There's not any social pathology that exists today that I couldn't put a name and a face to. So that period of my life where I was literally touching people's lives from the cradle to the grave is probably the best way I could have ever been prepared to deal with the job that ultimately is about dealing with people and understanding the incredible frailties and complexities of life.
Huckabee admits he's frustrated that more Christian conservatives haven't rallied around his candidacy.
I think that some of them, frankly, are more intoxicated with power than principle.
He told me he sees a focus on being pragmatic that he finds disturbing.
I hear some of the so-called Christian leaders say, well, we love Huckabee. He really agrees with us, and he's one of us in terms of views. But, you know, we're looking for somebody that we're confident is going to win. Well, two things. First, a lot of these people, if they would get behind me, I'd be winning right now. And I think I will ultimately without them. But secondly, if they really are principled, it's not about who might win, it's about who stands with us.
Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt.
But author and conservative Christian talk show host Hugh Hewitt says electability does matter. He notes that Huckabee and other GOP candidates haven't been successful enough in fundraising to prove that they are viable contenders.
We just better put forward the best candidate, and I think evangelicals will realize the stakes. There are going to be three retirements on the Supreme Court in the next 8 years. That's enough to capture anyone's attention.
Hewitt believes many evangelicals could ultimately bring themselves to support Giuliani, despite his record on abortion.
Yeah, I wish he was pro-life, but that the presidency and the life issue only comes down to judges, and he's going to be appointing pro-life judges because he's going to appoint strict constructionists, in my view. So it just doesn't have a lot of play with me. I think what matters more is, can they win? Can they look at Senator Clinton in the eye, beat her in a debate? She's going to be the nominee.
But some religious right leaders are already floating the idea of a third-party candidate if Giuliani gets the Republican nomination.
Now, that would be interesting. I remember when James Dobson was interviewed recently about a third party. He said, no, not third party, not third party. In fact, I've talked with some people who say, rather than third party, they're just going to sit it out and wait. Do you agree with Hugh Hewitt? He says electability is so important, and the prospect of an election, another Clinton presidency, this time Hillary Clinton, is serious enough to get people even to vote for Rudolph Giuliani. Are you one of those, despite his position on abortion? Would you vote for Rudolph Giuliani for that reason? Because, as some might say, he's the only one who could possibly beat Hillary Clinton, despite his positions on abortion and gay marriage. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issues etc. at kfuo.org. I heard on the news 2 days ago that when Missouri voters are polled, Giuliani wins. In a head-to-head race against Hillary Clinton, he wins by, I think, 5 percentage points. Missouri is one of those states that politicians watch, because Missouri tends to poll the way that the nation goes. It's not as much as something like Ohio or elsewhere, but it tends to poll and be able to pick presidents.
I don't know about that.
What do you mean?
I think Missouri has gone Republican for even during some of President Clinton's. I mean, I'll have to look it up, but Missouri is a pretty hardcore, considered one of the lock states for the Republican Party.
Right,
it's not like Illinois across the river. Illinois is much more, you know, swing than Missouri is.
Well, I'm not saying it's a swing. I'm saying it tends to predict presidents. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but do you think Missouri, both President Clinton's first and second terms, Clinton won in the state of Missouri? I don't know. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I can't believe that because
I honestly
don't
know.
You had Talent and Bond. I mean, all the Senate Republicans were winning the Senate races. during those times. But maybe they split. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the fact remains that in a head-to-head race, hypothetical, for Missouri voters, Giuliani wins in Missouri at this stage in the game. So you don't want to vote for Rudolph Giuliani because of his position on abortion. Can't blame you. You don't want to vote for Rudolph Giuliani because of his position on gay marriage. Can't blame you. But if he is the nominee and the one that all the people who should know better says he's the one who will keep Hillary Clinton, who is not just pro-choice, but very pro-choice, and not just in favor of gay marriage, but very much in favor of gay marriage, out of the White House, is that enough reason to get you to the polls to vote for Giuliani? What do you do? I mean, you can sit it out, which a lot of people do anyway, for fewer reasons than that. You can go ahead and vote for Giuliani, or you can vote for somebody else. Those are your three basic options. Which do you choose? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issues ETC at KFUO.org. It's audio open lines. We're listening to a story from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly on evangelical indecision. You know what I wonder is whether or not this is a tempest in a teapot. Because we've talked with guys like John Green, who appears in this PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly story from Pew Forum. And he says the untold secret, the thing that people always fail to notice, is it's not always the values voter, the evangelical voter, the Christian voter. I'm talking here about Protestant Christian voters that make the big difference. He says the bigger issue are Roman Catholic voters. Who do they support? We heard from Colleen Carroll Campbell, who said, you know, a lot of Roman Catholic voters tend to trend toward the Democratic side anyway, and they only vote Republican because the candidates usually tend to be pro-life. So what good does it do us if Rudolph Giuliani is the nominee, he's pro-choice, and if he can't even pull voters of his own church, the Roman Catholic Church, along with them because he's abandoned the life issue, what good does it do him? 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850, or issues ETC at KFUO.org.
Many Christian right leaders, and indeed many conservative Christian voters, are very committed to the social issue agenda. And the idea that the Republican Party would, in their view, abandon that agenda would be very, very problematic.
God bless you all.
At the same time, Democrats are increasingly courting evangelicals and other people of faith, emphasizing issues like social justice and the environment. Earlier this year, Democratic National Committee Chairman Howard Dean spoke to the Evangelical Eastern University in Pennsylvania.
Part of my job is to reach out to the faith community to talk to them about Democrats, since we've been completely absent in the faith community for a long time. We've been afraid to show up. We've been cowed by people who denounce us from the pulpit.
Illinois Senator Barack Obama's campaign has been holding a series of faith forums in key electoral states, inviting people to come together to discuss the role of religion in politics. Joshua Dubois is Obama's director of religious affairs.
People of faith are critically important to this campaign, as are all Americans who are hungry for change, hungry to bring people together across lines of division and really come together around our common hopes and our common challenges.
Evangelical author and activist Brian McLaren spoke at this Obama Faith Forum in Iowa.
You know, so many people have assumed, really for decades now, that to be evangelical means that you're a conservative Republican and that you have a whole package of ideology that's centered on two moral issues, one or two moral issues. I represent a growing number of evangelicals who are completely unsatisfied with that characterization.
Evangelicals, and especially younger evangelicals, may not be as tied to the Republican Party as they were in other recent elections, but they're not yet moving to the Democrats either.
And therein lies one of the puzzles of the current presidential process. There is an opening for Democrats among evangelical voters, a strong Republican constituency, but they still have not yet made the sale.
Some wonder whether disenchantment may cause evangelicals to pull back from the political process altogether. Huckabee says it's vital that people of faith stay engaged in the public square.
It's about standing for your convictions. And if it's not about that, then I'm afraid that many people got involved for all the wrong reasons.
79% of evangelicals voted for George W. Bush in 2004, nearly 40% of his total vote. That's a lot of support still up for grabs in 2008. I'm Kim Lawton in Washington.
All right, there's a story from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly. So are you undecided, frustrated, and what are you planning to do, especially if Rudolph Giuliani gets the nomination? He's pro-abortion, he's pro-gay marriage. He would most likely, we don't know these things, but he would most likely be running against Hillary Clinton, who's also pro-choice and pro-gay marriage. Are you going to sit it out? Are you going to vote against your convictions and say it's better to have a pro-choice Giuliani than a pro-choice Clinton? Or are you going to go for the third party, which some people might say is a combination of sitting it out and voting against your convictions? Who knows? What are you going to do? If the election were held today, what would you do? 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850, or issues ETC at KFUO.org. I'm listening to John Green in there, and I'll read again what he said. He says, there is an opening for Democrats among evangelical voters, a strong Republican constituency, but they still have not yet made the sale. Do you know what I think might make the sale and really change the face of American politics permanently? You know what would change it? We're watching a little bit of something happening with the Republicans actually contemplating the nomination of a pro-choice candidate. You know what would really change things? A pro-life Democrat. There are a lot of evangelicals and a lot of Roman Catholics who would love to vote for a pro-life Democrat. Not all of them, but think about how many Reagan Republicans. Reagan Democrats, thank you. Reagan Democrats have been waiting to vote for a pro-life Democrat. Would the Democratic Party do this? Would they put forth a pro-life candidate? What if it meant the lock? You combine a smaller segment of the evangelical voters, general pro-life voters, and Roman Catholic voters. You could lock the White House with a pro-life Democrat, especially if they're running against a pro-choice Republican like Rudolph Giuliani, don't you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Oh, you can dream. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. Joel in St. Louis writes this. Regarding the candidates, I have heard very little from Giuliani's own mouth regarding his pro-choice stance. Let's get that ready to play again. I want to play that little Rudolph Giuliani statement about his pro-choice stance, if you would, in just a moment after I respond to Joel's email. But what I did hear from his mouth on a PBS interview was that he feels that it is not the federal government's job to regulate abortion. He feels this belongs in the hands of each individual state, and he went on to say that adoption rose by a large percentage during his time in New York City. I'm sure that there's more to the story, but I found that intriguing. Well, now, let's a couple things to respond to here. First, yes, Giuliani does believe that the issue of abortion belongs with the states, but if asked, how would it get to the states? How would it get to the states? You'd have to overturn Roe, wouldn't you, for it to become a state-by-state issue. He's been asked about overturning Roe. He's not willing to do it. So you can say you want it to go to the states, but it doesn't go to the states as long as Roe stands. All right, that's one point. Point two is, he might hope to overturn Roe because he says he's going to appoint strict constructionist judges, but his voting record and his record as mayor of New York doesn't seem to indicate that he's all about strict constructionist judges or pro-life judges. In fact, in Colleen Carol Campbell's column on this very subject, she writes, Giuliani's record suggests, as the Village Voice reported, his newly declared abhorrence of abortion was unknown in his tenure as mayor of New York, during which he repeatedly hosted celebrations at City Hall of the Roe v. Wade ruling. Celebrating the Roe v. Wade ruling, I say, and received 100% ratings from NARAL for his rejection of parental consent measures and his support for taxpayer funding and partial birth abortions. Now, he's flip-flopped on partial birth abortions. He says he's now against it. He still does believe that there should be taxpayer funding for abortion because he says as long as it's a constitutional right, that is, as long as Roe stands, people who can't pay for their abortion should have them paid for by the state. I look at the man, and aside from the fact that he says, I hate abortion, I don't see anything indicating that he's pro-life. In fact, Colin Carroll Campbell couldn't see the difference between his position and John Kerry's position on abortion. What do you think? 505-780-5100-730-2727, issues ETC at KFUO.org. It is true that during his tenure as mayor of New York, adoptions rose and abortions went down. He's quick to point that out, and he encourages adoption. You know, there are a lot of people who are pro-choice who encourage adoption. They like to have it both ways. They encourage abortion, they encourage adoption. Or if they don't encourage abortion, they don't actively discourage it. The old saying is silence in court means, yes, it's assent. To remain silent on the issue, especially when Roe still stands, is to support Roe. 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850, issues ETC at KFUO.org. Now, he said, Joel in St. Louis said he hadn't heard from Giuliani's own mouth Giuliani's position on abortion. Just for the record, here it is again.
This is a very, very difficult issue of conscience for many, many people. In my case, I hate abortion. I would encourage someone to not take that option. But ultimately, since it is an issue of conscience, I would respect a woman's right to make a different choice. When you come down to that choice, you have to respect a woman's right to make that choice differently than my conscience.
Am I misunderstanding Giuliani here? This sounds to me like I'm personally opposed, but I support a woman's right to choose. This sounds to me like John Kerry 4 years ago running for president saying, well, I think abortion is wrong and it's bad, and I wouldn't recommend that anyone else have one, but I can't impose my personal views on the public, and I cannot infringe upon a woman's right to choose. If you hear a difference, please give me a call. I want to hear where the difference is. And I would remind you that Republicans fought like the Dickens against John Kerry's candidacy, and many of the same Republicans 4 years later are fighting like the Dickens for Giuliani's candidacy. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850. When I heard that they had a list of Christians in Hollywood, prominent and influential Christians in Hollywood, I started trying to make a list of my own. And I could come up with Mel Gibson, and then I drew a blank. Now, I'm not saying Mel Gibson is the only Christian in Hollywood. I'm certainly there are more than that. But I couldn't, off the top of my head, think of who the others might be, especially the prominent and influential ones. I can think of prominent Buddhists in Hollywood. I can think of prominent Kabbalists in Hollywood. I can think of prominent Jews in Hollywood. I can think of prominent Scientologists in Hollywood. But coming up with prominent and influential Christians was a little more difficult. Now, I got a chance to look at the list, and then I thought, aha, okay, and now I know of some of the people of which they are speaking. Here's a story on Christians in Hollywood from Fox News.
Is there a place in Hollywood for Christian values, you might ask? Well, a new list of power players in Tinseltown suggests that there is. Yes.
And here to tell us more about it is Fox News anchor and religion correspondent Lauren Green.
Hey, good nice morning. To meet you, Lauren.
And it's very interesting because you're talking about the question of, hey, is Christianity okay? Well, yeah. Our number one person on the list, they're like a top 10 list of Christians in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And number one on the list is Mel Gibson. You were talking about how crazy he is. Why is he on the list? Well, I'll tell you, he is a little crazy, but he has paved the way for a lot of Christians. He has given Christians clout in Hollywood. He was crazy when they thought, you know, I'm going to spend all my money on making this Passion of the Christ. Yeah. And he spent what, how much money on this? It made $370 million domestically, $211 million internationally. It made over $1 billion.
Wow.
I mean, $500 million.
Wow.
And so Hollywood likes green.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they're basically, the BeliefNet was quoted saying, Hollywood is now on its unique holy grail quest for our next passion. And so that's
sure.
why
they
you
really
got
are.
This next wave of Christian kind of film. So Mel is on the list because he has really paved the way for other Christians. Number two on the list is Denzel Washington. And interesting,
Denzel, exactly.
Because he's a quiet Christian. You wouldn't
yeah.
think, it's like, wow, I didn't know that. He's a quiet Christian. He doesn't wear his religion on his sleeve. He is Hollywood's A-list, $20 million a film. But yet, he attends the West Angeles Church of God in Christ. He's given about $2.5 million to the church. He's the son of a preacher, man. You know, we
yeah,
say about
is.
Them.
He is.
But he's also the voice in this Bible Experience audio tape.
You know, I have that. It's a fantastic
yeah.
way of introducing the Bible to so many people. It's done so much good drama in it.
Right. Yeah. So he's very into the church.
And he does a lot
he's also
for the
very
community.
Visible. He does a lot for the community.
He gave
so,
a lot
in
of
fact,
money
he did
time,
this Bible Experience. He got hooked into that because someone in the parking lot of the church was talking to him about it. He goes, I have to be involved.
Yeah.
We're hearing a Fox News segment on the top 10 most prominent and influential Christians in Hollywood. So far, they've mentioned Mel Gibson, who's number one. That's really no surprise. He's been the one most in the news. And, of course, you put out a movie like The Passion of the Christ, and you will probably top every poll when it comes to who's the influential Christian in Hollywood. Next is Denzel Washington. Many people might say, wow, I didn't know that Denzel Washington was, in fact, a Christian. They used an interesting term there, didn't they? A quiet Christian. He's a quiet Christian. We're going to hear more of this on the other side of the break. It's audio open lines. Then we'll play some issues, etc. Soundbite of the week, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If they get down on the list, there might be some names there that do surprise you, especially given kind of their political proclivities. You might say, wow, I didn't know that they were a Christian. Well, lo and behold, Christians exist on both sides of the political spectrum. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. More about Christians in Hollywood after our break. Issues Etc. is brought to you in part by Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief. Not a quiet Christian, Pastor Matt Harrison, although I would say Denzel Washington probably has something on him by way in the looks department, although I'm sure Matt's wife would disagree. Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief are concerned about both body and soul. You can find out more about the great work they're doing, and you can support it by going to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or call 1-888-930-4438 and earmark a donation for any of the work that Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief are doing around the world. 1-888-930-4438. Tomorrow on the program, the person and work of the Holy Spirit, Corey Moss, will be our guest. A very interesting conversation Sunday night with Dr. Tim Rosso about small groups. It is the conventional wisdom that churches need to employ small groups nowadays to get people integrated and assimilated and connected with one another in these large suburban congregations. Well, is that a new phenomenon, and is it a positive one? We'll answer that question Sunday night on Issues Etc. Stay tuned.
Where Christianity meets culture. You're listening to Issues Etc.